Navigating relationships, so now I'm coming back to me. So navigating relationships, when I was extremely depressed, when I was in my early 30s, I'm very much of a relational person. I don't actually meet a stranger very easily, and so I was always just like sort of a social butterfly. But when I became depressed, that was not the way it was. I was really surprised how I struggled relating. And so I've had that, and then I also have a very strong personality, and I've always worked away until the end of August, actually. I'm actually home and working by myself. And so because I have a very strong, well, I guess it's because I have a strong personality, I've really struggled relationally too. And about 10 years ago, something happened, and that caused me just tremendous a lot of pain. And that's when I actually took a real good look at my relational style and my struggles in relating. And I thought I struggled because of all the pain that other people had inflicted on me. But when I actually really took time to consider, it wasn't just that. It was also ways that I had hurt people. So what I care about really, really deeply is that we all can have good relationships because we're created for relationships. We're not created to live in isolation. So I want to talk about the causes that make it difficult to relate, and then how to be a risk taker, and then just some foundational principles of that can guide our relationships. And out of these, some I got from books, and some are just my personal journey, things I've done. And so we are gonna begin by talking about causes, and I think one of the causes is we have different personalities. Like if you think about the two women that were in Philippians 4 that Paul was talking about, like Euodia and Syntyche, like they worked side by side in a church. And I believe they were very, very instrumental in their church, but they couldn't get along. I have no idea what the issue was, but I would like to think that it was because they had different personalities and it just sort of clashed. Like, I've worked at Faith Builders, I just completed 17 years, and I don't know if it's just me, but I've had a lot of personality, I mean, a lot of relational clashes during that time, and I've really had to work hard at that. And so Paul told the men in the church, like, help these women, help them know how to get along. And that's exactly what has happened to me. Like, I've had to have people help me figure out how to get along with women, how to hear them, how to not always be so competitive with them, because I'm a very competitive person, and I wanna be the best. And so it's just caused a lot of struggles for me. So I believe, and so what was really difficult for me is I often felt guilty and condemned because I was like, why can't I get this relationship? Like, why can't I get along? Like, what's wrong with me? And so so one of the points here is it is easy to feel guilty and ashamed when someone experiences negative emotion when interacting with others. And so for a long time, I just hunkered down and I was really silent because I was so ashamed that I just couldn't get along with people. And you know, and what I began to realize is like there was just a number of frozen things that were stacked up. Like for me, when I don't get along, I just sort of freeze. And then all then that frozen memories start to stack. And then before I know it, then it begins to bleed out, and then it caused me to clash. I guess that's what it caused me to clash. I don't know. I know I'm a very sinful person, and so there was probably other causes, but at least that's part of it. And so one of the things that I've needed to do was be very upfront with my struggles and just not feel so ashamed. And we'll talk more about that. I think another cause is selfish desires. Okay, think about this. Like Adam, he was alone when he was first born, and he felt alone because he had no helper that was fit for him. And God saw his aloneness, and then he created Eve. And I don't know where I read this, but I read it somewhere. It says, like, when Eve came to Adam, he was so delighted that he had a companion. And, you know, and but then there was this difference between Adam and Eve. And sometimes he was like, wow, I'm really enjoying this woman. And then the next time it was like, I don't know what to do with this woman. And then the next time it's like, oh, this is so good. And then I can just see him vacillate as they were trying to figure out how to do a husband and wife relationship. Because I'm not married, but I hear lots of women and my counseling mentoring that I do, they talk about their husband struggles, and I'm just like, I get that because I have my own struggles. And I think it's really easy to feel depressed and frustrated. Like, we can have good desires, like relating is actually a really good desire, but it can turn really selfish when we demand that it be a certain way, or, you know, if somebody doesn't want to love me and I'm thinking she has to love me, and so then that can cause pain when we demand something that that is actually really, really good. And maybe it has nothing to do with the fact that there's something wrong with you, that woman doesn't want a relationship with you. Maybe it's just simply their personalities clash. Maybe the woman doesn't know you. Maybe she would really like you if she gave you a chance, but, you know, she's not doing that. So sometimes it's we cause it, and then other times it's really not something that we're doing. And I think that's something that we you know, need to be aware of. And it's someone, when depressed, I think it's really hard to discern, is it selfish? Is it legit? So I think it's really important that we have safe people to talk with. Like, that has been really, really helpful. I started my depression in my 30s, and so this is 30 years later, over 30 years later, and you know, it's something that I'm continually working on, and it's something that I think I'll keep working on. All right, so it's jealousy struggle is the next one. Okay, so jealousy struggles, like two women in the Bible that I thought of was Hannah and Peninnah. Like, they were the husband of what was his name? I didn't write his name down. Anyway, they had one husband, and they were really, really jealous. Anyway, they shared a husband, and Peninnah, she had children, and Hannah didn't, and they were really jealous of each other, and they clashed. And the conflict really intensified when Hannah's husband gave her a double portion. Like, it just, that just intensified the struggle. And this went on year after year. And Hannah, she could not handle the taunting and how intense it was. That, so she, one day when she went to I should have read this a little bit more. I'm sorry, I'm just like throwing a blank, because like when something like this happened, then it sort of throws me off, so I have to get back on track. Anyway, when they went to sacrifice, then Hannah, she was pouring out her heart to God, and Eli thought that she was drunk. And she said, no, I'm not drunk. I'm just so sorrowful. And so maybe the problem with this is maybe they both feared losing something that gave them stability and emotional support. Like, we're born for emotional support, we're born for stability. And so sometimes when we fear losing that, then we can become really jealous if we look at this person over there and we see what they are getting and we are not. I think jealousy is a core issue among women. I've read one time and I've heard things. Now, I don't know what is with this fly. It just got to distract me. Maybe, anyway. Yeah, I think that's right. I always want things to go just right, you know, but hey, things like this happen. We live in a fallen world, so. But I believe that jealousy is to women like porn is to men. I don't know why that is. I think all women struggle with jealousy. And it's one of the causes for relational struggles. And rather than be jealous of a woman when I see her doing really, really well, is to, like, can we talk about it? Can we talk with somebody that's safe that can help us learn how not to be so jealous? I've had to do that over the years, and I don't think it's good when we go into hiding, because what that does, it actually begins to stack up. And then that can also be a cause of our depression when we're just full of jealousy and we don't know how to deal with it. So I think we want to, you know, really work hard not to move into shame, but to talk about it with others. So the fourth cause that I have is comparing ourselves with others. When we compare ourselves with others, it can cause relational issues. So think about Mary and Martha. Like, I don't know for sure how that was, but we know that they had conflict. And particularly Martha was, you know, thinking about Mary. And so maybe if we can look at it this way, like maybe Martha, she kept eyeing Mary. She was just sitting back there and she was silent and she was listening to Jesus. And she was thinking, what is up with her? Like, can't she come and help me get ready for these guests that we're going to be feeding soon? And you know, as that feeds, then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it turns to resentment. And Mary, she was just so calm. And Martha, like, she was scurrying around and she was getting everything, you know, and trying to get all her work done. And Mary's personality was more reflective and not so tuned in maybe to the physical needs around her. Like, I don't actually know because I wasn't there. I didn't know them. So I'm just assuming a lot of things. Mary, we do know that she fretted that her sister wasn't helping her. And what all was going on, I don't know for sure. But let's bring this closer to home. When we are depressed, I think it is easy to compare ourselves with women that are emotionally stable. It's really easy to do that. I would look at that woman and I say, wow, she's emotionally stable. I am so up and down, like my emotions are low, and then I feel better, then it's low again, and it makes it really difficult. So relationships are complicated. This was the point here. Then when we compare ourselves with others, it complicates relating even more. If anyone wants these notes, because you can't write, because you can't see it, I'll be glad to give them to you then, later on. So relationships are complicated. Then when we compare ourselves with others, it complicates relating even more. So maybe one way that women, it's easy for them to do is, let's say, how you raise your children. I don't have children, so I don't quite know what that is like, but I do compare myself. And so maybe it can make somebody feel like they're doing a really superior job. Maybe for others, they feel very inferior, like, why can't I do it like she does? And so, you know, it can work both ways. So like if it makes you feel superior, it's easy to become proud. But then if you feel inferior, it can feel like you're not doing anything right. And that can also, bleed into depression. So I believe we are all created uniquely, complex, and different. Let's enjoy our differences and be thankful for God's creativity. Like, think about it. If we were all the same, how boring would it be? It would actually be really boring. And so be thankful for God's creativity in making all of us the way he did. The fifth cause is from desires turned into a demand. So is good desires turned into a demand? So if we would go back to Peninnah and Elkanah, I thought I had put his name down somewhere, I just put it in here later. Her husband, he loved her just like he loved Hannah, I believe, or I would hope he did. Like, I don't know why. Like, I'm just so grateful that we're not allowed to marry two men, because can you imagine the jealousy that would be raging if one man was trying to navigate two women? So Peninnah's desire to be loved and cherished was actually a really good one, but then it became sinful when she demanded that her husband loved her exclusively. I mean, he could love her exclusively, I believe, when he was with her, but I don't know that he could love her exclusively, because he was also obligated to love Hannah, and maybe he had other wives too. And so I think the good demand to be loved, to be cherished, to have emotional support from her husband was actually a really good one. But it turned into a demand when she demanded that he love her exclusively. Now, these are just assumptions I'm drawing and things that I've been thinking about as I prepared for this. So it's easy for a good desire to turn into a demand because it's something we do not have. So think about it. If there's something you do not have, we want it, right? Because we want relationships. But sometimes, particularly when we are, when we're depressed, it's really hard to navigate relationships and feel like they're good. So I think we're created to be loved and cherished by those around us. If desires turn into a demand, it can cause many relational struggles. I know that there's a lot more causes. The list could go on, but those are the ones that I'm going to talk about today. But I know there's a lot more causes. Okay, so what we're gonna do next is we're gonna shift and we're gonna talk, be a risk taker. Now, I know when you're depressed, it's incredibly hard to be a risk taker. But I believe, like when I was in my 30s, I was really, really depressed. That was my most difficult depression. And then over the years, I've had other depression, but it was never as bad as that very first one. And maybe it was just because that first one felt so, so bad because it took me by surprise because I had vowed that I was never going to become depressed. I don't know what I thought how I could prevent it, but I thought I could. And so when I became depressed, it just felt really, really bad. All right, so be a risk taker. So what I was saying is I know it's really, really hard. So one of the things that I encourage you to do is, like, maybe take one of these. and think about something that you can do and work at that, and then you can work at something else. So I think risk takers take responsibility to pursue. I love it when somebody pursues me. Even now, when I'm like feeling okay, I really enjoy when somebody pursues me. But I know that if I want relationships, I also have to pursue relationships. I think it is, whenever there's a difficulty, it is difficult to navigate relationships. It's just easy to draw back and not pursue. And even when I feel emotionally stable, it is difficult for me to take responsibility to pursue relationships. It is easy for me to say, I cannot handle it because I'm depressed. I feel too overwhelmed. I have too much to do. And it's very easy to hide behind our activity and not pursue. I know one thing, like for when I was in my early 30s, I joined a support group, and that was because my counselor really enjoyed that. And I would have never joined a support group if it would have been up to me to do it. But my counselor said, you need more than just yourself. You need people. And I think the best thing that you could do is join the support group. And I said, how many ladies are in there? And he said, I don't know for sure, but I think there's like 5 or 6. And I was like, whoa. He said, would you just go? And so I went, and I'm very grateful that I did. I have one sister, and so up till the time I was depressed, I was always the initiator. Most of the time, I pursued relationships. I'm a doer and a leader, and she's a follower, and so she just followed me. We were 2 years apart. And but when I had my depression, she was like, are you just not gonna do anything? I says, I don't really care. I don't feel like it. And so she began saying, okay, I'll plan this. Or she says, hey, did you know that we're invited to this? And I knew it, but I had forgotten it. And she says, let's go to it. And so I went. So I was really grateful for my sister, the way she initiated during my time of depression. So the point here is, when depressed, it is not good to be isolated. This only perpetuates the depression and alone feelings. Let me repeat it. When depressed, it is not good to be isolated. This only perpetuates the depression and alone feelings. I know it's very difficult to pursue relationships when depressed, but I think it's vital to have relationships in our low periods of life. So I would just like to encourage you to be a risk taker and take responsibility to pursue someone at least once a week. If you have others pursuing you and you're already busy, you don't need to. Because you also have to watch that you don't go on overload, because too much relating can actually throw the depression in an overload and stimulate you too much. So you want to be careful of that. Like, you need enough alone time to actually recover, but you need enough relationships to actually keep going. Does that make sense? And it's really a hard balance. When I was depressed, all I wanted to do is stay home and just vegetate. But I don't think that will never get us out of our depression, never, I guarantee. So we need a balance. The second way to be a risk taker is come back to the gospel. So this morning, Julian did a really good job of talking about that. So I think it's really good to come back to the scriptures to find answers and courage to do the right thing. And I think it is incredibly easy when we're depressed to be really hard on ourselves and to condemn ourselves. And so if you're someone that can read scripture, I think it would be good to just so that you can bring your heart back to Jesus. Because Jesus does not condemn. That condemnation is coming from a source, from the enemy, and not from Jesus. I like to read scripture. I don't know, I'm probably weird, but I like to read scripture because there was quite a lot of depressed people in the Bible. There was actually quite a lot of messed up people in the Bible too. So when I would read how messed up they were, I felt better. I mean, not that I want people to be messed up, but I felt really messed up. And so it was just like, oh, these people are in the Bible and they're all messed up, like, but they did so much good. So I believe that even if we're messed up, we can still do much good. I mean, we can do much damage for sure, but we can also do much good. And so for me, reading the Bible was actually a source of comfort. And I know I don't have a sensitive spirit like some people do. Like some people are very, very sensitive. And they can soon feel condemned because they're not doing something wrong. I'm not one of those. And so maybe that's what made it easy for me to read the Bible. I don't know. If you're struggling to read the Bible, like just talk about it with someone. Like I have a couple ladies, two right now actually, that they're very sensitive and they're just really struggling to read the Bible. And the two just said, I'm not reading the Bible. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like I go along with them because I don't want them to continually feel condemned. But one thing that the one lady did is she began reading, listening to Psalms being read. And she said, that helps me. So maybe you want to listen to the Bible being read. Maybe you just need to go to Psalms, or maybe you need to read the Gospels and just see where Jesus was, how he loved people, how he healed people. I don't know what it takes, but I think we should, you know, if we can't read the Bible, we should talk about it to someone and then try to understand how to be a risk taker that comes back to the gospel to find truth about you, about God, about your situation. So the third way to be a risk taker is guard against paranoia. Paranoia is a big thing when depressed. I was paranoid about many things. I did not like myself, so I assumed nobody else liked me. I was very paranoid about that. My mom had also struggled through two depressive episodes, and she was hospitalized twice. And my dad told me that when the first time my mom was at the height of her depression, she constantly asked him, "Who are you talking to about me?" And he said, "I'm not talking to anyone about you." And she said, "You have to be talking to somebody. I'm a bad wife." And he said, "I told her over and over, I'm not talking to people." Now, I don't know if I asked him, like, "Were you really not talking to people?" And he said, "No, because I wanted to tell mom that I'm not talking to people." But she wouldn't believe it, him. And he just said it made me miserable, but she was also miserable. And so when I was depressed, I didn't know this until after my depression. I gave my parents lots of grief, and I'll talk more about that tonight. And I believe that they were working against me, not so much dad, but mom. And so it was very difficult because I just really believed that they were out to get me. And so after my first episode, I made a purpose that when I have a downward spike, I will talk to someone because I know I am paranoid about people actually loving me. And so when I feel this downward spiral, I reach out to somebody. So I wrote for the key is to understand that at the height of depression, it is easy to feel misunderstood and misused by those around us. Let me repeat. It is easy to understand that at the height of depression, it is easy to feel misunderstood and misused by those around us. Jeremiah 17 says, and if you're sensitive, don't read too much into this, but the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. That doesn't mean just because you're depressed, you're desperately sick. Everyone is desperately sick. We all need Jesus. We all need his redemptive forgiveness. So, there's a lot of sick hearts when they're emotionally stable, but when depressed, it's really easy to believe that there's something wrong with me. And I think that's why we need stable people around us to help us navigate relationships when depressed. The fourth way is risk takers, they can pray. I know maybe you'll say, well, I just can't pray. And that's where you're at. I'm not being condemning about that at all. But you can maybe ask someone to pray for you if you can't pray. I think it would be totally appropriate to ask someone to do that for you. So the point for this one is it is important to have people around us who are stable and can help us pray about navigating relationships and the struggle with trust. I remember when it was hard to pray. It was hard, difficult to trust, and I was depressed, and I couldn't really manage it the way I used to be able to. So what I wish, looking back 30 years ago, I wish I had extended a lot more grace and love toward myself. I tended to err on the side of needing to be tougher toward myself and ridiculing my weakened condition. I thought I should be strong all the time. I am not strong all the time. I have my lows. When I was preparing for this workshop, my friend asked me, she said, are you going to go to the seminar? And are you going to act like your depression is something back there? And I was like, what are you talking about? And she says, I think you need to say your depression is ongoing. And I was like, well, what will people think of me if I've never overcome depression? And she said, that's why you're talking, right? And so I'm just telling you, and that was really, I don't know if I would have actually done that if she hadn't told me. So I wish one thing that I could have done, coming back to praying, I wish I had considered pouring out my heart to Jesus like Hannah did. That's something that's really difficult for me even now. But I just, like, I see some people, like, they're pouring their hearts out to Jesus. And I really admire people like that. And so so I'm still working at some of the, I'm still working at unthawing some of the frozen sections in me. I'll have that till I die. We all do. And so I keep working at that. I know that God is faithful. And I know that we don't have to pray a certain way. We can simply say, God, I'm miserable. I hate life. are you really with me? Do you love me? Do what you can. If that's all you can do, Jesus will be okay with that. At least you're talking to Jesus. And that's what I did initially. And I'm just grateful that I had this sense. People told me he's always with us. The fifth thing is risk takers stay engaged. Now, I know relationships are hard to navigate. It might be easier to say, I'm no good. I have nothing to offer anyone, than try to stay engaged in a relationship. The thought, I am no good, is a deep felt emotion that is common while depressed. I didn't work for 4 weeks, which was when I was at the height of my depression. This just made me feel really, really worthless. I was able to rest more, which was helpful, but actually for me, being home alone was not helpful. I'm not married, I don't have children, so I was home alone. And going back to work after 4 weeks was incredibly difficult, but for me, it was a good thing. And one thing that it did is it helped me stay engaged. I was a supervisor, so I was also in charge of people, and I had to stay engaged because I had to run my my responsibility. And so, and it was like, every evening, I would just go home totally exhausted. And I hated it, but I kept plugging away at it. And eventually, I quit that job and went and worked at a retail store, which was not nearly as stressful, and that was really good for me to help me really get back on track then. But staying engaged was really key for me, and one thing that I really want you to consider here is stay engaged with non-depressed people. I stayed mostly engaged with depressed people, because it was safe. I could relate with them. And I don't do that anymore so much. Like, I have both. And so I believe non-depressed people, they can help you recharge. So this is a point that I wanted to have for this one. Being around only depressed people can help you feel supported, but not necessarily recharge you. Being around only depressed people can help you feel supported, but not necessarily recharge you. God wants us to take the first step in staying engaged, and he will be with us and give us the strength needed. I don't want you to feel condemned when you're not, if you're not doing that. I know you're all at different parts of your journey, so please take what you can, do what you can. That's all the Lord is asking of you. So the last section that we want to look at is foundational principles that help navigate relationships, and that is stay grounded with God. Okay, so I believe that God created us for relationship. He created us to worship him, to be in relationship with him. So my point here is interpersonal relationships and desires are hardwired into us. Like, they're just innate. They're hardwired into us. We need God to navigate the complexity of relationships. Genesis 2:18 writes, then the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper who is just right for him. So Adam wasn't alone, and it was good that he was not alone. And I think, like, during depressive episodes, our heart can grow dull and our ears can shut down because we're so focused on our depressive episode, on our depressive state, and the darkness, like just that darkness swirling around us. And that's common. So I think this is also key to remember. We need those around us to pull our inward focus to an outward focus. Now, when I work with people, that's a tricky thing, because some people don't want to be outward focused, like they want to focus inward. And I agree, like we need to have inward focus because there's things we need to work on, but it's always for the purpose of helping us focus outward, away from our depressive and things we're not doing right. So I think we need to stay engaged. We need to have someone that can help us have an inward, outward focus, help us to have an outward focus. And it is, you know, so like when we are in depression, at the height of depressive episodes, it is difficult to find a balance of being alone to recover and staying engaged to not feeling isolated and overstimulated. When you're depressed, it's really easy to become overstimulated, and that's not going to help us overcome depression. So it's a hard balance. And I think that's why, you know, it's like if you can stay grounded with God, like he understands both the isolation and our desire for relationships. And so to find a balance, I needed to have people help me find that balance. The second thing is, principle foundation, is get along with yourself. So when you're depressed, do you get along with yourself? I know I didn't. Do you scold yourself, call yourself names, argue with yourself, and tell yourself what you must do and not do? Like all of us have inner dialogues going on inside of us. And this can make it bleed outwards. And then that inner dialogue can make it difficult to get along with ourselves and other people. One thing that we want to remember is we are made in the image of God. When sin came into the picture, something died within us. Our fallen, sinful nature can cause inner turmoil. Often we do not acknowledge our inner turmoil because we're too ashamed of it. Instead, we try to convince ourselves that we are feeling the way we do because of our depression and whatever is not working right. And that's, I think that's appropriate. So the point here is many interpersonal relationships can feel difficult because of spilling out of our inner turmoil. Many interpersonal relationships can feel difficult because of spilling out of our inner turmoil. Like, when I was depressed, and even sometimes when I'm not depressed, I have this inner turmoil just raging. At the height of my depression, the inner turmoil was ruthless and it was constant. And it was, like I said, it was a terrible life to be at odds within myself. And it was terrible, it was just a terrible life that I couldn't get along with myself. So something that has been helpful for me is, like Paul, he said in Romans 7:25, he said, I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Thank God that he heals me, sick heart, because I do want to get along with myself. It is important for us to get along with ourselves, because if we can get along with ourselves and be at peace, then it helps us get along with those around us. The third point is relational tribulations are inevitable. Relationships are a lot of hard work, even in emotionally stable times. And relational difficulties can easily happen when depressed, sometimes because of the mistrust within us. And we are all fallen people. We have all been wounded in some way or another just because of the sins in the world. And so Jesus said, in this world, you will have tribulations. So Jesus is not saying when you will have tribulation. He is saying you will have tribulations. I think the relational difficulties, feeling mistrustful of others, is part of the tribulation, or maybe the paranoia, or I don't know. It could be any of the causes of relationship. Jesus tells us what to do when we experience tribulation. He said, I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. You may abide in me, and I in you. So I would like to read the whole verse together now. I have said these things to you, that in me you will have peace. In this world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Think about Jesus. He was always in conflict with somebody. Always. I believe he understands the inner turmoil, the relational struggles. And Jesus says conflict is only half of the equation. The other half, remember, is redemption. There's always redemption for difficulties. And it is really easy to resent tribulation. So the point that I would like for you to get here is, on the other side of tribulations is the hope of God's redemptive power to restore the good and beauty in relationship. On the other side of tribulation is the hope of God's redemptive story power to restore the good and beauty in relationships. So tribulations is never the end of the story. Every time God heals a relationship, every time he heals you, it's a miracle. It's a miracle that is happening today. Miracles didn't happen just back then. It's actually happening today. The last point, oh no, I have two more. I'll try to hurry because the clock keeps ticking. Is continually adjust attitudes. While depressed, I think it's really important to periodically adjust our attitudes, because it's really easy to develop the attitude of being a victim of depression. In some ways, we are a victim. We don't like it. We don't ask for it. It's just something that happened. So we are depressed because something is not working in us, and depression just is something that needs to be healed. And it's really easy to become fixated on the dark and depressive emotion, because there is a lot of darkness swirling around in our hearts. And so, when I mistrust somebody, if there's just this darkness, then I need to have people around me, and so that I can adjust my attitude about it. I believe, so this is a point that I want to bring out here, is the good life is about bringing our attitudes to Jesus and making godly choices while depressed. The good life can actually be part of your depression story, because it's not all bad to be depressed. There's much good that has come out of my life. Like, I wouldn't be up here speaking to you today if I had not been depressed. I would never have moved to Guy's Mills. I grew up in Indiana in an Amish community. I would never have gone to Guy's Mills, did the work that I did, if I had not been depressed. That's what motivated the whole journey for me. So there's lots of good that has come out of my depression. So take heart. There is no way I would have made good choices and continually adjusted my attitude if healthy people would not have listened to me. One thing that I have felt really, really grateful for, and that is I've had a lot of good people walking with me through my low times. The fifth thing that I want to talk about is practice vulnerability. Vulnerability is the idea that I'm going to put myself out there even if I am wounded. Like, we're wired to protect ourselves, to not actually be wounded. Of course we don't. But when we put ourselves out there, sometimes we're also very we can also get very wounded and misunderstood. Like, I vowed that I would never get depressed, and I would never make those miserable around me while depressed. Guess what? I did get depressed, and I made people miserable with my moodiness. Practicing vulnerability has saved me from feeling alone and feeling so isolated while depressed. So I want to, this is what I want you to really get. Vulnerability is the basis for building solid relationships that can survive tribulation and depressive episodes. Let me repeat. Vulnerability is the basis for building solid relationships that can survive tribulation and depressive episodes. I'm going to read my final point in conclusion here so that I don't say something to make us late. I believe life is a network of relationship. God created us for interpersonal relationship and clothed us with personalities that are unique, different, and colorful. It is natural to gravitate toward the relationships that bring us the most happiness, growth, and fulfillment. However, despite our best efforts and intention, sometimes we go to church with difficult people. Sometimes we work with difficult people. Sometimes we live with difficult people. Navigating relationships often cause stress, tension, and anxiety. The negativity affects our mood and exposes us to the dark side of our soul. Most of us hate seeing this part of our heart. We must remember this is part of living in a fallen world. Let's remember, so this is, if you can remember this, Jesus is with us and helping us navigate relationships. As we engage in relationship, he redeems the darkness in our heart. Then life flows from the Father into us. This is where we can find hope, love, and faith to do well with interpersonal relationships. So my hope for you is this, that you can be a risk taker, that you can understand some of the causes, and that you can remember some of the foundational principles that can help guide the relationship. Relationships are hard work. Relationships are complex, period. But we're hardwired for relationships, so we want to keep working at it. Thank you very much for listening attentively. And I think it's 12 o'clock. It is 12 o'clock, so we'll go for lunch.